Several years ago, my father-in-law passed away, and some of you knew him a little bit. He was an avid cyclist. He was somebody who just loved to get out on his bicycle and go for rides. He used to ride from Marlboro to Cambridge to work several mornings a week. And he had been doing it for, he went on, he and my brother-in-law went to Italy and rode through the Alps and the mountains in Italy. And then he also, he rode across Georgia with him. He just loved to ride. And over the years, he upgraded more and more. And by the end, he had a really high-quality bicycle. When he passed away, that bicycle eventually, I inherited that bicycle. It's in my garage. And I do get out and ride it every once in a while. I still wear the helmet that he has that a bird picked a hole in the top of while he was riding. And I still wear the shoes that he has and hope I can get my feet out in time so I don't fall over and hurt myself, which I had managed to do a couple of times, because they're clipped in and you can't get them out. But I got to tell you, every single time I ride that bike, I'm thankful for a guy by the name of August Meyer. That's probably a name you've never heard of. But back in the time when automobiles were just being introduced to America, one of the frequent problems they had was flat tires. They're out. The suspension in these things was beyond stiff. It was just solid. The roads were really designed for wagons and for horses. They were full of potholes and rocks and et cetera. So people would be out driving their cars up at the blaring speed of 25, 30 miles an hour, and they would lose air in their tires, and they'd be stranded. So this guy, August Meyer, came up with the idea of developing a portable air pump that they could carry with them. And so he started a company, I think it was called the Brisk Blast Manufacturing Company. And over a period of time, they got better and better at making these pumps, and they were selling thousands of them a week, and many cars were carrying them. Eventually, they developed what came to know as the self-oiled, single-barreled tire pump. And he started a new company called the Monroe Automobile Equipment Manufacturing Company. And they were, at one time, making millions of these. Well, times changed. Eventually, gas stations started putting in places where you could fill up with air. And automobile manufacturers started selling cars with spare tires. We still have spare tires today, right? Well, sometimes you can't really call them tires. They're just like a piece of rubber, whatever. But it serves the same purpose. So their business started to decline. But he had an idea. He took his technology that he had in this self-oiled, single-barreled tire pump, and they created shock absorbers, Monroe shock absorbers. They'll make them, right? You stick them in there between the tire and the frame, and it takes a lot of the bumps out of the road. When I ride my father-in-law's old bicycle, there are no shock absorbers. And you feel every little indentation in the road. You hit an acorn, you feel it. It comes right up through that steel frame, through the hard leather seat with absolutely no cushioning, right up through my fanny, and I feel it all through my whole body. It just rattles you, It's just hard, And every time I ride, I'm thankful for a guy by the name of August Meyer who invented the shock absorber. I say, what in the world does a story like that have to do in the midst of a series where we're talking about what it means to live with the end in mind? When we're trying to struggle with biblically, what does it mean to live successful lives? The first week we talked about the fact that we really need to know what the prize is. What's the goal? What is success? And we've understood that to be that it is the ongoing, heartfelt commitment to be the person that God intended us to be in every area of our lives. We understand that that's easier said than done because there's lots of distractions in our lives. There are lots of things that want to take us off course. And with that, we really have to have a sense of spiritual discipline. We have to have a value system that kind of goes along with it. And we looked at that last week in terms of staying on purpose. But before we get to move out into categories of our lives, like our careers and our relationships and other kind of pieces of our lives, there's still another thing that you and I need to deal with in the holistic part of our lives. If we're really going to be people who are successful, we have to learn how to deal with the difficulties we experience in life, right? I mean, you talk about getting knocked off track. I can remember when I used to have a dirt bike, and we used to, you always try to ride as fast as you can when you have a dirt bike. And you're going over these bouncy roads, and sometimes no matter how hard you held on and how hard you tried to steer it, you just got knocked off course. Same thing can happen on a snowmobile. I've landed up in several major snow drifts and I couldn't get it out of by myself just because you get knocked off course. Happens to us all the time in our spiritual lives. I've seen it happen in a lot of families over the years. When I was a young pastor, early one morning, 2:30 in the morning, I got a call from a guy who didn't like our church. His wife came to our church all the time. He didn't like our church very much. He didn't like church, period. He calls me. His 18-year-old daughter was named Danielle. She was taking a senior class trip. She went by herself to see a friend in the panhandle of Florida. He calls me and he says, "My Danny's been shot in the head. Would you pray for her?" spent most of the rest of the night calling folks in our body that were the kinds of folks that you could call at 2 in the morning who would get up and begin to pray. He called me back about 4:30, quarter of 5 in the morning, and he said, "My Danny is gone." Now, that's a pothole that can knock you off course. Sat one time in at Children's Hospital with a young family. They knew there was something wrong with their son. So finally, they just went in and said, "We're not leaving until you figure out what's the matter with our kid." All day long, from 9 in the morning till late in the afternoon, 5:30 at night, and finally, late in the day, the activity around their emergency room that they were in, they were in a little room kind of waiting, the activity began to really pick up, and within a few minutes, they learned that their 14-month-old child had a brain tumor. It's a major shock that hits. I remember another morning getting a call from one of the guys in our church, and he said, "Can you get over to our job site right away?" And it was just 5 miles away in the community of Norwell. They were building a new series of kind of like a strip mall that was looked like an antique kind of place. And one of the co-workers, a guy who had come to our church 6 or 7 times, overnight had committed suicide in his car, taking a dryer hose and hooked it up to his muffler, run it through his window, and just turned the car on. And not only dealing with the guys on that site, but then following the police over to the city of Hull. And when they left the widow's house, I got to walk in. It's a major pothole. It can knock you off course. The list can just go on and on, can't it? And we've had our own experiences in our own body. And what 25 years of pastoral ministry has taught me is that in those moments, there isn't anything that you can say. No matter how well you know the Bible, no matter how much the Spirit of God is with you, there isn't anything you can say that can make the pain go away. I mean, you can point out truth that creates hope and comfort and encouragement and all this, but you can't make the pain go away. When you lose a parent or a spouse or a child, it just hurts. It just hurts. When you lose a job that you were passionate about and you got no problem, it just hurts. And no matter what thing, there's pain that comes into our lives. And what that leads me to believe is that for you and I, as we look out over this journey of saying, I really want to be a person who lives with the end in mind. When I get done and God greets me at the pearly gates, I want him to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." You know, and with that, I want to be committed to success designed God's way. I want to have this ongoing, heartfelt commitment to really being the person God wants me to be. I don't want to get distracted by all this other stuff, but in the midst of it, I understand that I'm going to have to cope with difficulties in my life. And even though there's hope in the midst of all of that, there's still the pain. And what I think you and I need in order to be successful is to live our lives with some spiritual shock absorbers, some things that kind of take some of the jolt away in our journey. Can't relieve the pain totally, but it can make the ride a lot more smooth as we go through this journey. And I want to point out 4 of these spiritual shock absorbers to you today. Not intended to have one for each tire, but you can make that connection if you'd like to. But I want to base my comments, at least from a foundational perspective, out of the book of Ecclesiastes. If you have your Bibles, turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. If you're using one of our pew Bibles, you'll find the text on page 564. If you're using one of our own Bibles, it goes Psalms, Proverbs, and then Ecclesiastes, and you'll be able to find this text. Now, the premise of the book of Ecclesiastes is a guy who is filled with the wisdom of God, takes on the challenge of trying to examine life and make sense out of it. And his final conclusion, it says, the only thing that really makes sense is to fear God and to walk with him. But in chapter 9, he points out some realities for us that are very powerful. Beginning with verse 1, "Indeed, I took all this to heart and explained it all. The righteous, the wise, and their works are in God's hands. People don't know whether to expect love or hate. Everything lies ahead of them. Everything is the same for everyone. There is one fate for the righteous and the wicked, for the good and the bad, for the clean and the unclean, for the one who sacrifices and the one who does not sacrifice." Let me interpret that to mean that he's saying, you know, whether you're good, whether you're bad, good stuff comes into your life, bad stuff comes into your life. The experience and eventually the outcome of death is all the same, whether we're good or whether we're bad. Picking up again, as it is for the good, so it is for the sinner. As for the one who takes an oath, so for the one who fears an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun. There is one fate for everyone. In addition, the hearts of people are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead. But there is hope for whoever is joined with all the living, since a live dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead don't know anything. There is no longer a reward for them because the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their envy have already disappeared, and there is no longer a portion for them in all that is done under the sun. Go, Eat your bread with pleasure and drink your wine with a cheerful heart. For God has already accepted your works. Let your clothes be white all the time and never let oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife you love all the days of your fleeting life, which has been given to you under the sun. All your fleeting days, for that is your portion in life and in your struggle under the sun. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your strength, because there's no work, planning, or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. This is a sobering text. Now, I want to remind us of a few things today that I hope will serve as spiritual shock absorbers for us on this journey of really trying to live a life that's successful in the eyes of God. And one of those truths that really is a spiritual shock absorber for us is to recognize and trust that God is truly sovereign. Trust that God is really sovereign. One of the things I've heard often from people is, I don't know exactly what God's doing, but I know he's working. That's a symptom of trust in the sovereignty of God. I mean, these first few verses of Ecclesiastes 9, it says, you know, sometimes you look at life and it doesn't make any sense. The person who's the most devoted to God, their life gets dumped on more than anybody else. And the person who seems to have really no interest in God, it seems like everything they touch gets better. I mean, there's one fate for everybody. You know, there's no rationale. There's no rationalizing what's going on in our lives. It just means that God has chosen to treat all of us here on the planet as a part of his sovereignty, that we have a common experience. But you and I need to understand that God is always at work. No matter what the circumstances are, underneath God is always at work. I mean, you can see this storyline throughout the scriptures. Think about Joseph. Remember Joseph? One of the young brothers. He was a young boy. God gave him a vision. The meaning of his vision that was that all of his brothers, including his father and mother, were going to bow down to him. His brothers were appropriately ticked off. What they did with that anger wasn't so good. They sold their brother off into slavery. For 13 years, Joseph languished in a prison. What do you think is going through the mind of Joseph? I mean, this isn't like 10 days. This is 13 years he languishes in prison. Then when he gets a break, he acts in integrity, he lands up back in prison again. Yet God was at work. God had a plan. God fulfilled that plan. Joseph became the second most powerful person in Egypt and literally delivered all of the nation and the people of God from the famine that came upon the land. God's at work. Doesn't always make sense to us, but God's at work. Think about King David. Young boy. He's a snotty-nosed kid who gets the assignment of guarding the sheep. You know, so when God decides that King Saul is no longer fit to lead the people, he's ready to anoint a new king. And he sends Samuel to the house of Jesse. Jesse parades in all of his sons who look the part. They're big, they're strong, they got lots of hair, you know. And then there's Joseph, then there's David. You know, David is the scrawny little kid who's out taking care of the sheep. And God selects him, and he anoints him to be the next king. You think there was a red carpet rolled out with a huge inauguration for David? David had to live like a rat for a lot of his life before he came into his kingship. Once he fell out of favor with Saul because Saul recognized that he was the anointed one, not his son Jonathan, he sought to kill David. David, at one point in time, had to go to his enemies and act like somebody who had lost his mind, literally foaming at the mouth, in order to literally save himself. You wonder what was running through his mind. And yet, at a moment when it might appear that God had delivered King Saul into the hands of David, as David and his men are hiding in a cave, and Saul comes in to relieve himself in private, David could fall upon him and kill him without any problem at all. And he chooses to submit to the sovereignty of God. See, God's always at work. And you wonder about the Apostle Paul. He was a guy who said that he was most favored by God. He said, man, I among any am an example of the grace of God. And yet when you replay the life of Paul, and he does it himself in 2 Corinthians, he said 5 times he was beaten. I mean, he was lashed with a whip, 40 minus 1, 39 times. 5 times he was beaten or whipped, 39. He was beaten 3 different times with rods. He was shipwrecked 3 different times. He was left at drift in the ocean by himself for a day and a night. He was beaten. He was stoned. He was bitten by a scorpion. He was in prison. Boy, does that look like the favor of God to you? At one point in time, he had to escape from the city of Damascus by night because they were so anxious to find him and to kill him. And in all these folks, they trusted in the purpose of God. You know, sometimes we look at our lives and it makes no sense to us what's going on. But like these great people from the Word, We need to understand that God is always at work. And we need to trust in His sovereignty. That ability to say, I don't understand what God's doing, but I know He's at work. It is a tremendous shock absorber to the spiritual pitfalls that we'll experience in our lives. And it's really at the heart of the dialogue between Job and his wife, isn't it? You know, Job has all these calamities befall him. You know, and at first he says, you know, naked I came from the womb, naked I'm going to return to the Lord. The Lord gave, the Lord taketh away, blessed be the name of the Lord. Then when he gets physically ill, his wife comes to him and says, well, why don't you just bless God, just curse God and die? And he says, well, should we accept good from God, but not accept adversity? That somehow or another God's only worthy of our worship and our devotion and our commitment? As the holy universal being in the world, the one who gave us life, he's only worthy of our worship if he's good to us. But if anything bad comes into our lives, we say, you're out of here. Where's option B? Well, there is no option B. It's that challenge for us to really trust in the sovereignty of God. You say, well, you know, God hasn't made me any promises like he did Joseph or David or Paul. And I tell you, baloney. You know, God has said in Romans 8, he says, there is no condemnation for any of us who are in Christ Jesus. God doesn't hold anything against us. He might shape our lives a little bit to discipline us, but he doesn't hold anything against us. And it tells us that God is always at work for our good. That's your promise. That's my promise. I tell you what, having trust in that sovereignty of God takes out a lot of the major potholes we can face in our lives. I think there's a second great truth for us to learn. and I didn't know what was the best way to phrase this, so I'm going to let you pick your own point. All right? But I got to pick three in your sermon outline. You can define this as, you know, just maintaining hope in God's glory, the glory that's going to come to us at the end, or just keeping the faith alive. Or maybe your last way you'd like to put it is don't forget about eternity. Let me just let some scriptures wash over you. Don't turn there. Just listen to these scriptures wash over you. Tremendous words from God. Paul puts it this way, for our momentary light affliction is producing for us an absolutely incomparable eternal weight of glory. What happens here creates huge harvest in eternity, the hope of God's glory. From Philippians 1, he puts it this way in the 23rd verse. He says, I'm pressured by both. Let me back up to verse 21. For me, living is Christ and dying is gain. Now, if I live on in the flesh, this means fruitful work for me. And I don't know which one I should choose. I'm pressured by both. I have the desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary for you. What a certainty about that future hope, longing for the fruit of eternity. Or from 1 Peter, another powerful word, being shared with a spiritual community that was under oppression and experiencing difficulty, where he says, you rejoice in this, though now for a short time, you've had to be distressed by various trials, so that the genuineness of your faith, more valuable than gold, which perishes, though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Great words. Perhaps a great word to conclude this reminder of not losing sight of the fact of what's really at stake and what awaits us. Paul says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not even worth comparing with the glory that is going to be revealed to us. You know, some of you say, well, all right, help me understand how that helps. I mean, we had a next door neighbor, young guy, looks younger every day to me. In his middle 40s, active guy, ran, they liked to hike, they rode their bicycles a lot, you know, just, and when they went out for a bike ride, it was 20, 30 miles at a time, he and his wife. Very active guy. His heart just begins to beat so erratically, he just can't get any oxygen to his body. I mean, the journey from his front door to his mailbox and back was enough to wipe him out for a day. The medical solution? Crack open his chest. I mean, they cut his chest, cut his bones, put in a rib spreader, you know, break him open. Then they sliced his heart on the surface. It's like taking your beef and tenderizing it. That's what they did to his heart. Hopefully that as it healed, it would change its rhythm, its beating pattern, and go back to normal. And they closed him back. He was in excruciating pain. It took a long time to recover. Why do you go through that? Why do you go through that? Because you think it's going to make you worse? No, because you think it's going to make you better. Right? I mean, some of you have back problems, and you weigh that, well, should I have surgery or not? Is it going to make me better, or is it going to make it worse? When we remember eternity, when we remember that future glory that's coming to us, we understand that it's all worth it. We remember that it's all worth it. And that's a powerful shock absorber. You know, James Dobson, before he started Focus on the Family, was actually a practicing pediatrician. Told a story one time. He remembers an event. He was caring. One of his patients was a 5-year-old boy who had a terminal lung condition. 5-year-old, what, nothing they could do about it, he was going to die. When he was gravely ill and literally at the point of death, there was a point when the nurse was in there tending to him, and he started to yell out, "I hear the bells, I hear the bells, I hear the bells." And the nurse came running out. She was all flustered. She said, he's so bad, he's hallucinating, and et cetera. And the mother said, no. He said, he asked me one time, how am I going to know I'm approaching heaven? I told him that he would hear the bells of heaven, the angels ringing the bells. And so the mother went into him and held him until he passed on. But he was living his life listening to the bells. One of the great shock absorbers to our lives is to make sure we hear the bells as we deal with all the stuff that comes into our lives. Right? A couple more points. You know, part of it is that we just need to make sure that we enjoy the gifts that God's given us now. You know, the old proverb is, do we see the cup as half full and half empty, or half empty? You know, for most of us, the cup is both half full and half empty, And it's okay to see that the cup is half empty, but don't forget the fact that it's also half full. I mean, listen to these words from this wise guy who did all of this tremendous study of life. He says, go ahead, eat your bread with pleasure and drink your wine with cheerful heart, for God has already accepted your works. You're squared away with God. You're like me, but don't forget to savor the things that God's given you. It says, let your clothes be white all the time with your heads anointed with oil. Look like you're celebrating. Enjoy life. Enjoy life with the wife you love all the days of your fleeting life, which has been given to you under the sun. Whatever your hands have to do, do it with all your strength. You know, God's good, and he's given us good things to enjoy. And a part of the way that we soften the blows that we experience in this world that's not yet conformed to God's plan because of the impact of sin is just to enjoy the gifts that God has given us. Celebrate the days that we have. See the portion of the cup that really is full. You know, it's interesting throughout all of my journey, as I've watched people go through crisis, the thing that they will say is, I've experienced the love and the encouragement of God through other believers. They savor the good that God's brought into their lives in the midst of great difficulty. I'm amazed. We have a number of families in our church right now that were going through very difficult experiences. All of them are doing it with a tremendous spirit, grieving over what they've lost, but celebrating what God has given them. It's great stuff. And you and I need to enjoy the gifts that God has given us now, So with the idea that our hands are in the life of God and we may be here today and gone tomorrow, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't plan to use the good gifts that God's given us. I plan after service, Lord willing, go out and have a nice lunch with my parents who are here visiting with us for the weekend. And if, Lord willing, it's nice in the middle of the week, I have plans to play a round of golf with a ministry colleague who wants to talk to me about some things. And even if I hit the ball in the woods, it's going to beat working and I'm going to enjoy it. And I'll have lots of opportunity to do that. The end of the month, Lord willing, I'm going to go up to Vermont and hang out with the WPI kids as I lead their fall retreat. And I'm going to enjoy it. Even if the bed's lumpy, I'm going to enjoy it as we're sleeping at a farm or something, I think. And then come Thanksgiving and Joshua comes with his girlfriend. I'm going to enjoy the time. Even though it probably won't be as much time as I'd like to have, I'm going to enjoy the time. And then later in January and in December, I'll relish in taking Ben to the airport as he goes off on a mission trip to China for the Christmas holiday. And then February, I'll be thrilled to climb on a plane and go back to Rwanda to teach for a week or two. And then, Lord willing, if we get that far, I'm going to relish. Somebody recently gave Christina and I a gift of a 7-day round-trip cruise to Bermuda. We're going to schedule that and go on that trip, Lord willing. You know, we just need to enjoy the good things that God has given us. There can be lots of bad things that might come in as a part of that journey, but enjoy the good things. And in particular, enjoy the people that God has put in your life. The family that you were related to biologically, or the family that you were born, that you have inherited spiritually. One last shock absorber. You got this trust in the sovereignty of God. You've got this certainty of the hope that awaits you that transforms the way that we see everything. We have these great gifts of God that we need to enjoy now. And the last is simply just to trust in and enjoy the presence of God. You know, Paul experienced this so greatly, and he was inspired by God to write us in Romans 8 that nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. Not life, not death, nothing. Height nor depth, nothing can separate us. We are in the presence of Christ. And isn't it interesting that Jesus said to his disciples, "Lo, I'm with you always." Not, "Lo, I'm with you sometimes," or "Lo, I'm with you only when things are going good." "Lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. Even though I pass through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for thou art with me." We need to sense the presence of God in our lives. When Christy and I were in I went to seminary in Texas, and she followed along and finished up her degree at the University of North Texas. And in those days, we lived in Denton, and I served on a church staff, so did she, called Grace Temple Baptist Church. But across town, there was a church known as Denton Bible Church. And it was a significant sized church then, but it's become significantly larger. And now they average well over 3,000 people a weekend. The individual that God used to found that church was a guy by the name of Mel Summerall. And he started the church in 1976, literally just not quite a decade before we got there. And it really was out of the outflow of God bringing him into a very deep relationship with himself. In the journey that God used, I wouldn't say God caused, but the journey that God used was the loss of his daughter. He had three children, and the youngest of those was a daughter. She was 6 years old. She contracted a virus that attacked her heart. She got sick at 9 o'clock in the morning. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, she was dead. And he was working in a secular career. He was just devastated. And after a period of time, he would just go to work, put in his 8 hours, come home, sit in his chair. At 6:30, he'd get up and go to bed because he figured it didn't hurt as much while he slept. It went on for weeks, went on for months. The church that they were part of continued to minister to them. And at one point, a couple of people from the church came by to visit one evening, and he just didn't feel like he was up to the visit. And so he withdrew to his bedroom, and he was just sitting on the edge of his bed. And after a few minutes, he put his head down and began to sob into his hands, and he simply said, "Lord, I can't do this. I just can't do this." And this is a guy with a great Bible preacher led by the Spirit. God communicated back to him. He said the only time he really ever felt like God spoke to him audibly, if you will, he said, and I want to get the words right, he says, "I'm here. I'm with you. That's all you need to know. I'm here." And that just transformed his experience. And as he began to walk deeper and deeper with God, and eventually God led him into ministry, it was just because he knew, trusted, and enjoyed in the presence of God in the midst of one of the greatest potholes that you can ever experience on the journey to success. See, I can't make the pain go away, and God won't make the pain go away. I don't know why he's chosen to, but it's just the way it is. He's made us to love other people. When stuff in their lives hurts, when stuff in our lives hurt, we just grieve. It hurts. But God has given us some things that we can succeed in the journey. He's given us that incredible ability to trust in his sovereignty, to be certain of our eternity, great gifts to savor now, and a presence that will never get away from us. I hope those spiritual shock absorbers will be yours. Now, here's why this is so important, and I'm going to conclude with this. You know, that great theologian, Mary Tyler Moore, once said, "No one gets out of here without pain." You know, and she was very successful in her professional career. She had more hurt than most people deserve in her journey. Suicide of her son and a bunch of other things. She's true, right? We don't get out of here without pain. But this is why these spiritual shock absorbers are so important. If we don't live our lives with these, our circumstances master us. And if we're mastered by our circumstances, God can't be our master. And we can't be successful in his eyes. God, thank you that you've not left us alone in this journey. We hear your call to live abundant lives, to be great, to be successful. God, but we also know life well enough to know that abundance and that success doesn't always come just matched with pleasure. Sometimes it comes with pain. God, we thank you for these spiritual shock absorbers, the things that can allow us to absorb the blow but not have a flat tire on our journey with you. God, use these words today to bless us as we submit to you in faith, our sovereign God. Amen. Amen. I'd like to invite our worship team to come. These truths come to bear in our lives as God changes us from the inside out. And that's what we're going to sing about. And as we sing, I invite our ushers to come forward and to receive our offering. You can also place your connection cards in there. Let's invite God to change us from the inside out so that we can have this tremendous shock absorbers in our lives.